written by Govinda Das Kaviraj. This was one of the favorite songs of our Guru Maharaj. Because really in this song, the message of the need for Krishna in our life is very strongly understood. In this poem, Govinda Das is praying to his mind. What is the mind? Some people think that the mind is here. The mind is here. The mind is in the heart. The brain is here. The mind manifests itself externally through the brain. But all the signals are coming from the heart. It is described in the Shastra that the Jivatma, the soul, is seated within the heart of every living being. And that Jivatma is covered by two types of bodies in this material world due to its conditioned state of consciousness. It is covered by the subtle body, which is composed of the mind, the intelligence, and the false ego, ahamkar. And also there is the gross body, which is composed of five basic ingredients: earth, water, fire, air, and ether. So the brain is constituted of these five gross elements. But the mind is very, very directly covering the soul. And at the time of death, the subtle body, the mind, intelligence, and ego, carry the soul to another gross body, according to the particular consciousness in which one dies. It is said in the Gita, Yam yam vapi smaran bhavam jajatyante kalevaram tam tam evaiti kontaya sadata bhava bhavata. Which means, whatever one thinks at the time of death, that state he will attain without fail. And what is the last thought at the time of death? It is not that we can just live one way and decide that we will just think something else at the time of death and everything will be all right. You see, at the time of death, a person has no control of that last thought. The culmination of all of our activities, all of our desires, and all of our thoughts and feelings through our life appear before us at the time of death as one last thought. And that thought, that conscious state of the mind, it is the mind that is thinking. The brain is only the mechanism, as I say, to express it to the world. But the mind is thinking. It is that mind that takes the soul, according to the laws of material nature, to one of the 8,400,000 species of life, according to our consciousness. So, Krishna explains in the Gita, Yato yato nischalati manas chanchalam astadam tatastatam nayam yatad atman yena visham nayet. That the whole purpose of yoga, the whole purpose of religion, is to control the mind. Because the mind is directing the senses, the mind is directing one's life. Now, what does it mean to control the mind? The mind is seated between the intelligence and the senses. The gross body is composed of five senses: the eyes, the ears, the tongue, the mouth, and the sense of touch. So when the mind is following the dictation of the senses, which are on one side, the gross elements, then the mind is considered to be uncontrolled. It is material mind. But when the mind follows the dictation of the intelligence, then it is considered spiritual consciousness. But what is that intelligence? The intelligence is what we have heard from God. What is the truth? According to Gita, intelligence means the truth. What Krishna speaks, that is our intelligence. What Guru speaks, that is our intelligence. What the Shastra speaks, that is our intelligence. So if we can keep our mind always motivating our body and words and senses, our body, mind, and words, if we can keep motivated toward following the dictations of God, then our mind is controlled. But if our mind is simply following the dictations of our external senses, and our intelligence becomes spoiled by that, then everything we do will become a cause of bondage. So therefore, to control the mind and senses is the beginning of yoga. Of course, some people, they want to attain very, very high states of transcendental rasas, but they have not even learned the basic principles of controlling the mind and senses. So it is all an illusion. It is all a hallucination. We have to begin here, Krishna explains, in the second chapter of the Gita. Now, Krishna explains that the nature of the senses is that they are overcome by kama or lust. When lust awakens in our heart, we long to enjoy. We long to enjoy the feelings of the skin, the tastes of the tongue, the sights of the eyes, the sounds of the ears, the fragrance of the nose. People spend all their hard-earned money, practically speaking, just trying to satisfy these senses. All different colognes to make you smell good. People go to movies, watch the televisions, all sorts of millions of dollars being spent on fashions just to give some gratification to the eyes. And what kind of things people kill and cook and prepare and spice just to give some taste to the tongue. And all sorts of music and all sorts of politicians speaking and all sorts of God knows what else is being vibrated throughout the world to give some pleasure to the ears. And of course the flesh is always looking for something soft to touch, some object that we can direct our ever-increasing sexual impulses toward. In this way, the spirit soul is completely degraded and embarrassed. And when our kama is unfulfilled, it creates anger, krodha. And that anger can make a saint into a crazy man if we succumb to anger. In fact, Krishna explains in Gita, Triva dam nora kvaraidam dwaram nashitam atmata kama krodhas tatha lobhas. This means that there are three gates that lead to hell. Lust, anger, and greed. Greed and anger and lust are so integral lust means we want more. We just have such burning desire. And that leads to greed. We have such burning desire. In order to fulfill these desires, we need more and more and more and more and more and more and more. And it's never enough. It cannot be enough. Why? Because the nature of lust, kama, Krishna says it, is it burns like fire. The more fuel you put on it, the bigger it gets. It's not that fuel puts fire out. It makes it worse, more hungry, more ferocious. So we're thinking that the more I get, the more I'll be satisfied. But actually, the more we get, the more we become dissatisfied. That is lust and greed. And we see. Look at these big, big people. Like the poor people in the city, they're thinking, if only I just had enough to have a nice house and nice chapatis every day, then I would be very happy. And if they have that, they think, oh, my neighbors have television. If only I had a television. Then they get that. Ah, but some other neighbors, they have nice car. If only I had a car. Ah, they get that. Then they have a car and a television. They're thinking, now I need a nicer house. They get that. And they need a better car, a better television, a better house. Ah. Then if they get they have all those things, then they think, oh, I have all these things, but people don't respect me properly. I have to have dignity and respectability in society. Otherwise, what happiness can there be? And soon, they work, and they're famous, and they're multimillionaires. And they're still wanting more, more. They're more greedy and in more anxiety than they have ever been in their life. This is material nature. It is the trap of material nature. And even if you become the wealthiest person, the most famous person in the whole world, you'll always be in anxiety because you'll always be thinking someone else might become more wealthy and famous than me. So therefore, you're always defending. You're always on guard. So, and this is the trick of Maya. Our Gurudev told a story where there was a sadhu, and he had no possessions in the whole world except one kopan, just a small loincloth. And he used to sit on the bank of the Ganges just doing dhyana, meditation. And one day, a rat came and started eating. No, I'm sorry. One day somebody came up to him and gave him an extra set of kopans. Said, now when you bathe, you take this set off and you put it down and let it dry and you can have another kopan. He said, oh yes, that's really all I need is an extra set of... That's all I need in life is just one extra set. So he had an extra set. But while it was drying, a rat came and started eating it. So he couldn't meditate. He was constantly just chasing his rat away to keep him from eating his extra kopan. So he said to his friend that, I thought I was going to be happy if I had another kopan, but now I can't meditate because this rat keeps eating. His friend said, ah, don't you. It's a simple thing to solve this problem. You just get a cat. Ah, yes, of course. Why didn't I think of that? So we got cat. And the cat chased the rat away, so there was no more rat problem. But after some time, the cat became hungry. And the cat started crawling on his shoulders and crawling on his head and going, meow, meow, meow. And meow, meow, meow. Ah, cats, what does this cat want? He's clawing at me. He's hungry. So he went to his friend. What, now what? I can't meditate at all with this cat crawling on me all day and screaming in my ears. Ah, why are you taking this so seriously? It's an easy problem to solve. You need a cow. And you milk the cow and give him milk and then you meditate. Ah, yes, very good. So he got cow. And then he would milk the cow. Psh, psh, psh. Feed the cat, meow. And the cat was very happy. And he was sitting there meditating. Mm. Somebody needed to milk the cow. So three times a day the cow was my friend, what do I do? This cow wants to be milked. This cow needs to be brushed. This cow is having babies and everything. I can't meditate. That's why you're so in anxiety about such a simple thing. You need a wife. Your wife will milk the cow and take care of everything. She'll feed the cat. And the cat will keep the rat away. And then no problem. Ah, yes, I should get married. So he got married. And everything was very nice. He sat in meditation, and his kopans were guarded because the wife fed the cow, fed the cat, kept the rat away. So everything was going on very nicely. Until one day, do you expect me to live on this riverbank for the rest of my life? I said, what? He said, I'm your wife. Don't you have any respect for me? You expect me to live here milking cows all my life? I need a house. I need jewelry. I need servants. All these things. Why don't you get a job, you lazy bum? Do something with your life. Ah, yes, that's correct. We got a job. And he got a house. And he got servants. And he was working like an ass, day and night. And then he realized, I haven't meditated in years. So ultimately he decided, all I need is one kopan. So you see, this is the nature of lust and greed. Whatever you have, you'll always somehow or other complicate your life to need more. That's why Krishna says in Gita, one who is satisfied within, he is satisfied whether he has everything or nothing. But if one is not satisfied within his own heart, he cannot find any real pleasure, no matter what arrangements he makes in this world. And when our greed and lust is frustrated, and how many different varieties of ways can our greed and lust be frustrated? Our material attachments. They can be frustrated by the weather. It's like my father's business is he fixes cars. And he needs money to maintain everything. And everybody in the society, he lives in Chicago, they want in the winter, severe, terrible winter, snow and ice and everything. And everyone wants nice weather. But my father, he can't tolerate nice weather because nobody gets in accidents. And if nobody gets in accidents, he doesn't have any business. And if he doesn't have any business, he has no money. And if he has no money, he can't pay the bills. And if he can't pay the bills, then he goes crazy. So what does God do? Everyone's saying, God, give good weather. And he's saying, God, send snow and ice. So in this way, everything gets done perfectly. So when there's not enough snow and ice, due to the weather, everything goes terrible. If it's a cold summer, all the air conditioning businesses go out of business. Right? If it's a drought, all the farmers go out of business. So in this way, there's so many ways we can become frustrated. What to speak of being frustrated by other people? Who just completely get in the way of our ambitions and our attachments. Sometimes our attachments for wealth, sometimes our attachment for fame and prestige. If somebody steps between us and our goal, we become furious. We become angry. And in that anger, we lose all control of our good intelligence. We say crazy things. We do crazy things. We become crazy. Generally, we regret it after. We become a different person. So Krishna says that there are three gates leading to hell: lust, anger, and greed. And then Krishna says, every sane man must give them up, for they lead to the degradation of the soul. So how to give them up? To control the mind. By fixing the mind in the higher principle of spiritual consciousness. By fixing the mind on Krishna. So in this beautiful song, the poet Govinda Das is offering prayers to his mind.
Bhajahure mana Srinandanandana Abhaya charanaravindare Dulabamanava Janama satsange Taraha ehe bhava sindare.
O mind, please, just worship the lotus feet of the son of Nanda, which make one fearless. In this world, we are so much victim to fear, moment after moment. Practically everybody is motivated more by fear than anything else in this world. And how can we find peace in life when our actions and our motivations are based on fear? Fear is an anxiety. Fear is a frustration. Why do people work so hard? Because they're afraid. They're afraid of what will happen to their life if they don't have what they feel that they need. Why do people go to the doctor? Because they're afraid of suffering disease. Why do people go to a dentist? Because they're afraid of suffering from bad teeth. Huh? Why is there police force? Why is there fire department? Why is there a government? The whole government is based on the principle of fear. There's the military. Actually, most of the money of the world is going to military. Every country, the major investment is military. What does that mean? That the major mentality of every nation is fear. Fear that someone will come and intrude upon us. Why are there locks on every door? Fear. In this way, we're always afraid of losing what we have. Or afraid of not getting what we want. And ultimately, we are all afraid of death. But death is inevitable. People throughout their lives are afraid of death. But why should a person be afraid of what is inevitable? Because death is an illusion. There's no such thing as death. Krishna says in Gita, na hanyate hanyamane sarire, na jayate mriyate va kadachin, na yan bhutva bhavita vanabhuya, ajonati shashvato yam purano, na hanyate hanyamane sarire. That for the soul there is neither birth nor death. Once having been, it never ceases to be. It is not slain when the body is slain. Vasamsi jinani yatha vihaya nivani granati naroparani tata sarirani vihaya janati anyati samyani nivani dehi. Krishna says, what is death? It is a change of clothes. This body is a set of clothes. So why are we so much afraid of death? Because we are an illusion. We are thinking, I am this body. We have forgotten the eternal nature of the very self, the soul. This is the essential cause of all fear, illusion. Where there is light, there can be no darkness. Where there is truth, there can be no fear. Fear is due to darkness. When you're in darkness, you don't know what is ahead, you don't know what is behind. So it's a fearful situation. But when there is light, you see everything as it is. There's no fear. So it is explained in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Krishna Surya Sa Maya Hoya Andhakar Yahan Krishna Taha Nahi Mayar Adhikar. That Krishna is like the sun, which is the source of all light. And Maya, or illusion, is the source of all darkness. Where the sun rises, there can be no darkness. Can there be darkness in the sun? Darkness is only due to the absence of the sun. And factually, the sun is never absent. The sun is always shining. Darkness is when something comes between us and the sun. We are there, our eyes are there, and the sun is there. Why is there darkness? Something has come between. What is it that has come between? Between us, the light of truth, the light of God, and our soul. What has come between? This ignorance, avidya. We are thinking that we are of matter. We have forgotten our spiritual source. And that forgetfulness is the mass of matter that keeps us in darkness. So to remember is to be in light. To remember what is truth in our relationship with God. So therefore Govinda Das is praying, my dear mind, it's all your fault. Everything is your fault. Why should I blame anyone else for my problems? This is a great illusion. I blame the government because they're taxing me too much. I blame my competitor because he's cheating me. I blame my wife because she's not being obedient. I blame my parents because they're not dealing me with the way I should. I blame my children because they're rascals. And I blame the mosquitoes because they're biting me. And I blame the snakes because they're scaring me. And I blame the television because it's not working properly. And I blame my car because it's not working properly. And I blame the weather because it's too hot. Huh? We spend our whole life blaming others. But Govinda Das has given up on this process. He says, mind, it's all your fault. Nobody else's fault but yours. If you were just seeing according to truth all these problems, you would not mind. It's only because you're an illusion, my mind. It's because you have separated yourself from Krishna due to forgetfulness and material attachment that all these problems in life have come. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, there's only one problem in this entire creation. We have forgotten Krishna. There's no other problem. As soon as you remember Krishna properly, all your problems become blessings because you see Krishna. But if you don't see Krishna, all your blessings become problems. It is a fact. Therefore, rather than looking to blame everybody else or anything else for our problems in life, we should take the wisdom of Govinda Das and understand it's all the problem of my own mind. Because it's forgotten its eternal, blissful source, Krishna. Just like when Sadhu was telling me recently that nobody can disturb you. It's not possible for anybody to disturb you. The problem is not that people are disturbing you. The problem is that you're allowing yourself to be disturbed. Huh? If you're finding that wealth of transcendental bliss within yourself, and look, if you're looking for that, you'll find it. If you're not looking for it, then you allow so many people to disturb you in so many ways. But really, the fault is in yourself. Because there's infinite, innumerable varieties of ways we can be disturbed at any minute. So the question is, are we allowing it or not? So if any disturbance, this should be our consciousness. why is my mind such a rascal that it's allowing itself to be disturbed by all these petty, foolish, little temporary arrangements? Let me just... Abhaya charanaravindare bhaja hure mana sri nandanandana. Let me just put my mind on Krishna. My dear mind, please just go to Krishna. Just be with Krishna. Worship Krishna. Then there's no more fear. There's no more disturbance. And then he explains to his... He's telling his mind that this is the way that you'll be able to think of Krishna. Dulabha manava janama satsange taraha e bhavo sundare. Don't you know, my foolish mind, that this human form of life is so rare? Dulabha manava janma lobhya samsare. After 8,400,000 species of life serving our mind and senses, you finally come to the human birth, which is the opportunity to perfect your life, attain the highest liberation, and be with Krishna. That is the purpose of this human form of life. It's so rare. Why are you wasting it like the animals? Simply over the petty little things of this world. Fighting for little things of this world, my dear mind. Only by associating with sadhus. Dulabha manava janama satsange. Sat means truth. Sange means association. Satsange, by associating with truth. By hearing from those who embody the truth. Sadhu satsang. That is the way by which Govinda Das is explaining to his mind, you could always be with Krishna. By keeping holy association. That is the first and foremost, most important principle in life. And then he starts telling us a little bit of his past. He wants to share with us his experience in life. Sita atapa patavarishana edina jamini jagire. Vipale sevanu kripana durajana chapala sukalaba lagire. Both in the day and at night I remain sleepless, suffering the pains of heat and cold, the wind and the rain. For a fraction of flickering happiness I have uselessly served wicked and miserly men. He is explaining here that how he has spent his life, and now in his old age he is regretting. Edana jovana putra parijana ite ki ache paratiti re kamala dala jala jivana talamala bhaja hunhari padaniti re. What assurance of real happiness is there in all one's wealth, youthfulness, sons, and family members? This life is tottering like a drop of water on a lotus petal. Therefore, my mind, you should always serve and worship the divine feet of Lord Hari. He's explaining that he's been striving to find happiness and security and pleasure in the temporary manifestations of this world. One's wealth. How much we strive for wealth. Youthfulness. How much we try to enjoy our youthful health and vigor and enthusiasm. Even family members. They are coming and they are going. He explains that all of these things that I have completely dedicated my entire life for, they are no more significant than a drop of water on a lotus flower. They're here today and tomorrow they're gone. Everything. And what am I left with? The actual translation of this is, I have served all these things for all my life, and now I'm an old man, and what do I have for it all? Only one thing, a heart full of frustration and loneliness. That's all I have left. I've dedicated my life, and the culmination of all my hard work is a heart full of frustration and loneliness. Therefore, he's saying, my dear mind, please worship the divine feet of Lord Hari. It is the only refuge. And how to worship the feet of Lord Hari? Sravana kirtana smarana bandana pada sevana dasire pujana sakijana atmanivedana Govinda das avilasire. Govinda das's longing to engage always in the nine processes of bhakti, by hearing the glories of the Lord, by chanting the glories of the Lord, by remembering the Lord, by offering prayers to Krishna, by serving Krishna's lotus feet, by serving him as a servant, by worshipping him with flowers and incense, performing puja, by serving him as a friend, and ultimately by completely surrendering the Lord's one look to the Lord, one's very self. So this is a beautiful poem explaining the mind of one who has perfected his life by taking refuge and shelter of the Lord through the process of simply directing the mind toward Krishna. Now, how does this apply to our life practically? After all, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna tells Arjuna that you should not give up your prescribed duty. You should perform your duty. But you should keep your mind always fixed in thinking of me and offering the fruit of your work with devotion. This is real mind control. We should not be attached to these things of this world, knowing that they're temporary. But at the same time, Rupa Goswami explains that those things that can be used in God's service should be kept and used, and those things that are only a hindrance to our life should be rejected. So we find in this room tonight, we find industrialists, we find businessmen, we find lawyers. We find housewives, we find brahmacharis, we even find a tiny little sannyasi here. So we have school teachers here. Yeah, so many different types of people. We have pregnant ladies here. How is it that all these different classifications of people with all different types of duties and all different worldly responsibilities can all be sitting here together in a mood of love and trust and oneness and unity? Nobody saying, oh, you're in Maya. The big industrialists are not telling the brahmacharis, you're in Maya because you're not working in this world and making money. And the brahmacharis are not telling the businessmen, oh, you're in Maya because you are simply attached to all these worldly things. They both have mutual respect and love for one another because they understand the principles of Gita, that there is a need for all classes of men in this world. But the great need is that everybody learns how to perform their work in the spirit of devotion and detachment. Attachment means suffering. Detachment means liberation. And devotion is the positive aspect that means love. By being detached, we liberate ourselves from the cause of problems, but by developing that devotion in our heart, we can actually taste the sweetness of love. And this is bhakti. Vairagya vidya nija bhakti yoga. Shikshashtame ka purusha purana. Bhakti means a combination of vairagya and gyan vidya. That we understand the difference between truth and illusion, and we detach ourselves from the illusion, and we attach ourselves to the truth. And we perform our duty in this world in that attachment to the truth. Arjuna fought that battle of Kurukshetra very hard, and he was attached. But he wasn't attached to just winning an empire. He was attached to pleasing Krishna. And therefore he could perform his duty, and his attachment was an attachment of love. And his detachment from his own selfish motivations freed him from all suffering. But you cannot detach yourself unless you attach yourself to something else. Unless we attach ourselves to Krishna, we cannot detach ourselves from our own selfish ambitions in life, which are the cause of all problems. So therefore, when we first take to Krishna consciousness, we're asked to do essentially two things. Attach yourself to Krishna by hearing about him, by associating with his devotees, and by chanting his names. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. But it has to be done regularly, otherwise that attachment will not grow. We must hear about Krishna in the association of devotees of the Lord regularly. And we must chant the holy name according to a strict vow regularly. Praying is also a form of chanting. The whole chanting is a prayer. Praying, chanting, hearing, and associating with sadhus. This develops an attachment to Krishna in our heart. And at the same time, we follow four principles. No illicit sex. No intoxication. No gambling. No eating of meat. These four principles detach us from the most binding forms of karma. Illicit sex, intoxication, gambling, and meat eating are the four pillars of sinful life, which it's not that it's advised in a way that, oh, we're better than you because you do these things and we don't. But it's advised not to do these things because we love you and we don't want to see you suffer. And by the performance of these activities, you're binding yourself in such a network and web of karmic reaction that free yourself, liberate yourself from this attachment, and attach yourself to hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord and the association of his devotees. This is Gita. And then, through whatever work we do in our life, whether we're lawyers, or whether we're businessmen, or whether we're sannyasis, or whether we're students, or whether we're mothers, or whether we're housewives, whatever our situation is in this world, perform your duty in attachment to Krishna and detachment from one's egoistic, selfish desires in life. That is liberation. That is work without bondage. That is bhakti. Bhakti means to perform your duty in a mood of love. And in that mood of love, one is achieved the supreme state of liberation. So this is the sum and substance of this beautiful poem by Govinda Das. Does anyone have any questions? Sugarcane juice is naturally very sweet. But if you have jaundice, does it taste sweet? It tastes like bitter medicine. Why? Because of the disease, it has completely polluted and adulterated our ability to appreciate the sweetness. But it is that sugarcane juice, it is the sugarcane juice that will cure us of that disease. And as we become cured, we can come to our natural condition of appreciating its real sweetness. So we are so much diseased by forgetfulness of God that even God's name is hardly even attractive to us, although it is the supreme most attractive force. It is just like a magnet. A magnet naturally attracts metal, just like Krishna's name naturally attracts our heart. But when the metal is covered by dirt, what happens to the attraction? It's very slow. According to how much dirt, there's less and less and less attraction. So as we cleanse the dirt away, the metal will naturally be attracted to the magnet. Our hearts are full of dirt, full of material desires, full of material attachments, full of illusions and ignorance. Lust, anger, and greed. Therefore, the natural attraction for Krishna and his name, we are not experiencing. But we have to have faith that that is our nature. That is what all the great sadhus have said, that is what the scriptures say, that is what our common sense will tell us if we think about it. Therefore, we must take to that process of cleansing the heart so that that natural attraction will come about. And the cleansing of the heart takes place by the chanting of the holy name. Cheto Dharapana Marajanam. What tastes like medicine at the beginning tastes like nectar in the end. Sugar cane juice is the medicine for a sick man, and it's the most delicious drink for the healthy man. So the holy name of Krishna is medicine for the person who is covered by material illusions. But the holy name of Krishna is the sweetest, most source of all bliss for one who has revived his good spiritual health again.
You mentioned that when the soul leaves the body, the mind and the intellect, the subtle body also leaves. Now, I have also read in the Shastra that two contradictory things. One is two contradictory things. One is that we should discard this mental subtle body, this is of mind and intellect, so that your spiritual body, that is no different from the soul, goes home back to Godhead. The other side we have read that the mind should be spiritualized. And the intellect should be spiritualized. That comes along with the soul, out of the body. That way, like a pure devotee, his mind is spiritualized, his intellect is spiritualized, so he is no different. Which of this is true?
Both.
I've read both.
You see, connection with God, and material means disconnected from God due to forgetfulness. So this body is spiritual if it's used for Krishna. This microphone is spiritual if I'm talking about Krishna. This microphone is material if I'm singing rock music. So what is the difference? The difference is only in its purpose. So this body is temporary, but it is spiritualized by its acts of devotion. So similarly, the mind, the intelligence, and the ego are material ingredients. If they are utilized according to the will of the soul, according to the will of God, then your mind, intelligence, and ego are pure spiritual. If they're used according to the dictations of one's ahankar or false ego, then your body, your mind, intelligence, and ego is material. So the soul has a body, and the soul has a mind, intelligence, and ego. But they are all eternal and spiritual. The soul has an eternal body, and a gross and, not gross, but an eternal body and a total mind. Now, when we utilize our mind in reconnecting our consciousness to its original source, then those original qualities begin to awaken and develop. And then what happens is our original spiritual mind, intelligence, and ego simply manifest through the pure transparent via medium of the material mind, intelligence, and ego. In other words, this covering becomes transparent, and the eternal, real, original mind, intelligence, and ego simply manifests through that.
And then that's dropped off, the material one?
Yes, just like this body is dropped off. But the original one is not dropped off.
No, that stays with the soul.
They actually become one and the same. Just like is there a difference between your eyes and your glasses? But at the same time there isn't. Because you're seeing through the glasses. Now if your glasses were dirty, then it would be another thing. So the mind that is dirty is like dirty glasses. And the mind that has been purified is like clean glasses. Huh? You can see through. The soul can perceive. The soul's intellect, the soul's mind, the soul's, all its qualities can just completely express itself and perceive the world through a pure mind. The mind doesn't change the qualities of the soul. Right now, everything we say is, because of our ego and our dirty mind, whatever we say is contaminated by that. Whatever we do is contaminated by that. But when our mind becomes clean, it becomes like the glasses. We can see everything perfect and everybody can see us perfect. It's like a clean mirror. Huh? The mind is like a mirror also. When the mirror is clean, you just see yourself. When the mind is dirty, all you see is dirt. The chanting of the holy name is meant to cleanse the mind. Yes?
We are all in search of bliss, anand. But you said it.
Should we seek for problem? If you see every problem as blessing, you will not seek problems, you will seek blessings.
Very difficult to understand.
You just seek service. You just seek to perform the will of God. If you do that, you'll see everything as a blessing. If you don't, if you're seeking either blessings or problems, you'll only see problems. We're only seeking devotional service. If you're only seeking devotional service, then you'll see everything as a blessing of God. What you seek, you'll find. Where in the scripture does it say to look for problems? It says to look for devotional service. Then you'll see Krishna everywhere. What do you think? It's like Namamrita is having babies. I don't know, sannyasis have no diplomacy when it comes to these things. So she's going through all kinds of hardships and problems. I don't know what she's going through. I've never done it, but I have heard. There's so many problems. Some little creature is in there kicking and punching and I don't know what it feels like, but it's pain and you get sick. You made your mother do that too, you know. So did I. So did I. Huh? So, but because she knows that a beautiful child will be born, she bears it with love. It's a pleasure. She's grateful that she's allowed to go through all this. Right? So similarly, the problems that we're facing in our spiritual life, if we understand that by bearing these problems, Krishna is going to be born in my heart, then it becomes a pleasure. Whatever problems come into our life, it becomes a pleasure. We're grateful to those problems because in enduring these problems, I'm allowing Krishna to be born. Huh? Is there a difference? Nanamrita has become our Shiksha Guru. She's just by sitting there silently, she's teaching us the proper method of becoming Krishna conscious.